Kevin Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live, live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Connor Newt, you were out of practice today. Cam Ward said today's practice they were mid, which I don't even really know what that means. I guess that means they weren't bad, but they weren't good. They were mid?
Precisely.
Okay. Were they mid?
I would say so. Now, people are calling for my job for saying that, but I would say so.
Okay, so you would say they weren't bad, they were mid.
I mean, they did everything that they were supposed to do for the most part. They ran the offense. It was mostly short passes, but it just looked so low energy.
Give Cam Ward a grade for his performance today on the practice field.
I'd give him a B. He wasn't awful, but he wasn't, you know, elite, to say the least.
So it's funny because, again, people are treating Cam Ward. I was listening to this press conference and the questions are, how do you deal with all the attention of being the number one pick, Cam? And it's like, deal with all the attention? He's got the least amount of attention in the history of number one picks. How do you deal with all the attention? Regardless, today Brian Callahan said Cam Ward is going to get the lion's share of the number one reps at quarterback, which doesn't surprise me, although they did say there was going to be some big competition, and it doesn't feel like there's actually going to be some big competition, whatever. But what I've been saying all along when it comes to Cam is I'm worried about putting him out there and getting him absolutely murdered and annihilated at the beginning of the year. And so I listened to the questions and the answers when it comes to the Cam Ward press conference. I listened to what Brian Callahan's asked about when it comes to Cam Ward. And the one thing I feel like that is consistently getting overlooked might be the single most important thing. So people ask Cam Ward questions about wide receivers. Today he was asked about Treylon Burks. He was asked about Calvin Ridley. He's been asked about the young guys in the past. You know, they just, oh yeah, how's the timing with the receivers? How's the relationship with the receivers? You guys went out and worked in the offseason. How is it coming together with you and the receivers? Today about timing. How's the timing coming along? Callahan today was asked about his footwork. How's his footwork coming along? And all that stuff is important. I get it. But it's not what's most important for me as far as whether or not Cam Ward's going to be ready 46 days from now against the Denver Broncos. What matters to me is does Cam Ward have a basic understanding of protections at the NFL level. And that you'll be able to see in training camp. If Cam Ward has a decent understanding, and let's be frank, because no rookie really has mastered anything in the NFL, but especially something as complex as reading the protections and the fronts with the other defenses, but if Cam has a decent understanding of the ball out and where the heat's coming from and when it's going to be there, then I think you can put him out there against the Broncos right away and then he'll be able to get the experience that he needs. Some people will say, well, Jared, he needs experience. And I agree. Like, he needs to play football. So if he can understand the protections, if he can look at what the Denver Broncos are doing and he can say, okay, like they're this guy, that guy's coming off the blitz. So I need to, you know, check the back onto the other side to make sure that he can stop this rusher so that I'll have a little fine. But if Cam Ward doesn't get a good feel for protections, I don't think you can put him out there. And I just don't hear anybody asking about that. About when you get to the line of scrimmage. Cam, they talk about, Cam, you watch all this film and you, how much of that has taught you about protections? About knowing where you're going to see the blitz from. I remember listening to Bill Polian after Will Levis's first year. I know, Bill Polian, he sucks. Yeah, I know. Even though he's a Hall of Fame general manager. And Bill Polian said the number one thing you've got to get a young quarterback to understand is the blitz. They have got to be able to read pressure at the NFL level. I heard today TD ask a question about the depth, you know, the spacing on an NFL field. And Cam was like, well, the field's the same. it's 110 yards down and I'm 52 feet wide. I'm like, Cam, that's not what TD's talking about. The players on defense at the NFL level are bigger and faster. So the space for you to throw the ball to, not as big. But that, again, doesn't matter to me as much as protections at the NFL level. I know Will Levis loved football. I know Will Levis tried his hardest. But the one thing that I feel pretty certain about is Will Levis had no idea how to read a defense. No idea how to read the blitz. Did not know where pressure was coming from. And that got him killed. And I'll be honest, I think Marcus Mariota, even as a veteran quarterback, you know, towards the end of Mariota's tenure with the Titans, I think Mariota really struggled understanding protections. That's why when Ryan Tannehill took over, especially with Arthur Smith as his coordinator, but Ryan Tannehill right away was very good at diagnosing blitzes and defenses. I remember there was a game they played out in Oakland in 2019 where the Titans went into Oakland and just beat the crap out of the Raiders. And after the game, John Gruden at the press conference said, I mean, I just don't know what you're supposed to do with Tannehill out there, man. You know, you just go out there, you put in a defense that's going to try to stop the run, and Tannehill checks out of it, and he'll throw the ball down the field. And then if you protect against the pass, Tannehill turns around and hands the ball to that big beast in the backfield. I just don't know what you do. And that's why that team was able to flip a switch once Tannehill got in there. Because, again, Ryan Tannehill, and Tannehill had his faults, but Ryan Tannehill, especially with Arthur Smith and when Ben Jones was healthy, Tannehill could diagnose pressure before the snap. Again, I'm not saying that Cam Ward needs to be an expert before he gets out there on the field. But I am saying that one thing we've got to keep an eye on, one question that needs to be asked of the coaching staff, one question that needs to be asked of Cam, is how is he handling learning protections and diagnosing pressures and blitzes? Because I know everybody wants to know about the throws. Everybody wants to, how's the ball look coming out of his hand? Everybody wants to know about the arm strength throwing it down the field. Oh, how'd the deep ball look? Did he connect to Ridley with it? Did he connect to IO Manor with it? Did he? And so on and so forth. But when I hear a young quarterback talk about watching film, and I hear about the talk of how important the QB room is, and how important having Brian Callahan as the coach is, and how important Bo Hardigree has been as the quarterback's coach, what I want to know is, where is Cam in terms of processing the protection? Because as much as we get excited about a big touchdown pass, as much as we love a big playmaking receiver, as much as footwork matters, as much as arm strength matters, can he make those throws? Can he? I think we've learned over the last couple of years of watching Titan football, if you can't protect, you can't win. And yes, a lot of the protection issues with the Titans had to do with the guys doing the protecting. We all agree. But at the same time, you've seen Tom Brady play quarterback. You've seen Peyton Manning play quarterback. You've seen Drew Brees play quarterback. When those guys are going up to the line of scrimmage and they're pointing out, 53's the mic, 53's the mic, and they're making checks at the line of scrimmage, it's because they understand the protections. If Cam doesn't understand the protections, he can't go on the road week one at Denver and play on a silent count in that atmosphere against that defense, or else he's going to get killed. And now Brandon Allen's the quarterback for the rest of the year. Can't have that. So that's the thing I want to see, you know, and I want to hear about is not how's the relationship coming along with the receivers. I don't care about that. That stuff always gets itself worked out. What I care about is, how is he coming about picking up the protections? How is he coming up about diagnosing the blitz? This is the NFL. Again, I watched him play Cal last year. I watched him when he was in the ACC, and Cam had this thing where, again, I think it was, I forget who it was, they'd bring six guys against a five-man protection, seven guys, and Cam didn't make a check at the line. Cam would sit there, you know, 53, 52, hut, clap his hands, look over to the sideline, take the snap, and then there'd be two free rushers, and he'd just wiggle away from them because he was athletic enough to be able to do it. He can't do that in the NFL. Levis could not diagnose pressure. Mariota, again, I think really struggled diagnosing pressure. Tannehill, when he was at his best, he could do that. So that's what this team's got to figure out is, can Cam do enough to protect himself before any of the other stuff matters? 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, 615-737-1025, here on the program if you want to weigh in. Coming up next, there is something Cam said today that I couldn't believe it. I shouldn't be surprised, but it's ridiculous, and even you know it. We'll get to that next. I'm in a company, 1025 again.
Last three questions right here, guys.
Simple question. The team you put on the field tomorrow, can that team win the Super Bowl?
Listen, that's always the goal every year. Yeah. We also realize we have a lot of work to do on this roster.
That was the big one yesterday from Mike Borgonzi. Him and Chad Brinker are like, oh, we don't know how to answer that. And then they say, no, we got a lot of work to do. So, again, I say, hey, at least they told you the truth. I know people get mad because sometimes the truth hurts, but at least they told you the truth. So Cam Ward today was asked, I don't even remember the question, but Cam Ward was asked about the receivers or something, and Cam Ward said this, and if I was his coach, I would have ripped him for saying it, but here's what Cam Ward said today.
Obviously, for a couple of days, and I know you've been working out with guys in the offseason. How much did that help make you today a bit more seamless?
Real good, just from an understanding of how they're going to run their routes, to them understanding, you know, my ball placement where it needs to be, allowed them to make plays up the field. But we got a talented group of receivers, tight ends as well, and running backs who can, you know, make plays in the check down game and in the run game. So, you know, just the pieces that we have, you know, I think we're one of the top, you know, we're capable of being one of the top offenses in the league.
What? So, it always drives me crazy whenever I hear somebody who hasn't been there and done that say things like that. Cam Ward has been in the NFL for exactly one training camp practice. And he's saying, we've got the talent on this team to be one of the best offenses in the league. Number one, no they don't. Cincinnati has Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. You don't. Philadelphia has A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Saquon Barkley, and Dallas Goedert. You don't. I can go on down the list, team by team, of who has what, and you ain't got it. But I also just hate the idea of a rookie quarterback acting like he can say something that ridiculous, like he's been there before. He's acting like, oh, I know what it takes in this league. And the answer is, you do not. Years and years and years ago, Bill Belichick ripped a rookie receiver or a rookie DB. I think it was a rookie DB. I think it was Brandon Merriweather, who was at a charity event and talked about covering Wes Welker and saying, you know, I'm covering one of the greatest receivers, slot receivers in the history of the game. And the next day, Belichick called him out in front of the team and said, you have never evaluated a player in your life. You don't know who the best slot receiver is. You don't know anything. You just do what we tell you to do. When Cam Ward gets up there and says, you know, we've got the talent to have one of the best offenses in the league, it makes me not take him seriously. And I'm sure there are some Titan fans out there that heard him say that again, in a press conference. Yeah! But look at this team. Ridley is a solid number two wide receiver. Calvin Ridley is a solid number two. He is not a number one receiver. Outside of that, Chig sucks. Tyler Lockett's old. Van Jefferson, who knows? Io Manor and DK are rookies. Tajay Spears hasn't done anything in the NFL. Outside of Calvin Ridley, there's not a single meaningful NFL player on this offense. At least at the skill position, you know, one of the best offenses in the league. And yet Cam Ward, a rookie who's never thrown a pass in a game, is going to get up there and say, we'd be one of the best offenses in the NFL. It's not that easy, Cam. Again, the question was so simple. You know, hey, you've spent time working with your guys in the offseason. How's that? Yeah, you know, we got a lot of work getting into, blah, blah, blah. You can compliment your guys, but to say we could be one of the best offenses in the league, what do you know about being one of the best offenses in the league? You've never played in the league. Like, I remember when Chad Brinker said in the pre-draft press conference that Cam Ward is confident, but he's not cocky. And then I've heard some of the things Cam has said, and it does rub me as a little cocky. Like, you think it's that easy in the National Football League to just snap your fingers and take a bunch of nobodies and say, hey, they're going to be one of the best offenses in the league, and they're going to be one of the best offenses in the league? You think it's really that easy? I'll never forget years ago before the Bengals playoff game. Somebody asked Vrabel a question. You know, I think it was a TV person. And, you know, TV people ask questions for that 20-second soundbite they're going to run in their 1 minute and 30 seconds of sports coverage that night. And they asked Vrabel a question, you know, what is it about Burrow and Chase that make them so good? And Vrabel, who can't help himself, said, what do you mean? It was the first pick in the draft and the fifth pick in the draft, i.e., they're really talented players. When it comes to this team, you don't have that. Cam Ward, we think we could be one of the best offenses in the league. Let me just say this. If Zach Wilson, when he was quarterback of the Jets and had never taken a snap, got up there and said, I think we can be one of the best offenses in the league, you would have laughed at Zach Wilson. Now that it's your guy that's saying it, in the same position basically that Zach Wilson was in, now you're going to tell me I'm a hater, but I hear that and I'm like, Cam, give me a break. We can be one of the best offenses in the league? No, you can't. One texter says, because he's confident? Jared, take your meds, because that is an outlandish thought. Let me say this. You think that they can be one of the best offenses in the league? You've got your team. Ridley and a bunch of nobodies. Or you can have Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. Or you can have Jordan Addison and Justin Jefferson. I mean, you could just pick a random team and say, hey, look at their skill position players. And their skill position players are probably better than yours. Best offense in the league. I mean, again, confidence and ridiculous. There's a difference. Lincoln is up next. Our phone line is driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Lincoln, thank you for calling. Thank you for waiting. You go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Jared. I wanted to touch up a little bit on your segment earlier about Cam being able to read pressure and, like, make reads in the defense.
Sure.
So one of the things I've noticed with the Titans, like, schedule is that two of their hardest games all season are in week one and week two. And the reality is, with this quarterback room, Cam Ward's probably going to get some playing time this season. But I just can't help but feel like there's no reason for him to be out there until at least week three. And I understand that he needs his playing time and he needs to develop. But, like, I just can't see a scenario where with this offense, we put him out there week one in Denver against that defense and against Sean Payton, and it goes well. And so I just – say what you want about Brandon Allen, but he's been in the league long enough to at least manage the game.
So here's what I would tell you. Thank you for your call, Lincoln. If I were the Titans, Brandon Allen would be the starting quarterback week one against the Denver Broncos, and Brandon Allen would be the starting quarterback week two against the L.A. Rams. So I would agree with you. I think that the three toughest games this year are Denver, the Rams, and the Chiefs at home. The Titans actually don't have a really tough schedule. I mean, maybe if you want to throw Houston in there as one of the tougher teams, maybe. But I think Denver on the road, I don't think there's any way to win that game. You're going to be at a silent count, one of the loudest, toughest places to play. The Rams have Verse and Fisk. I mean, the Rams are tough. And the Rams last year, you know, really found themselves at the end of the season in the post-Aaron Donald era. I mean, they went toe-to-toe with Philadelphia in that division round playoff game in the snow. I think if I were the Titans, I would be telling Brian Callahan, Brandon Allen goes week one and week two, and then we'll reassess before week three against Indianapolis. I mean, Cam should play this year. I think the way I would do it is I would put Cam out there week three against Indianapolis if Cam's ready to go against the Colts, because the Colts defense is certainly nothing like those first two. And so then the offensive line, which is a new offensive line. The left tackle has never played with the left guard before. The center is coming off of an injury. He's never played with the right guard before, and the right guard's never played with the right tackle, and the right tackle is changing positions and has never played right tackle in the NFL. So it's going to take a little bit of time for those guys to gel. And, you know, PK says things like, they need to be ready to go week one, and it's like, that's just not going to happen. So you give the offensive line a couple of weeks to gel, which I think they're going to need, and then Cam goes out there against Indianapolis, which certainly is not as intimidating as Denver or the Rams, especially when it comes to the pass rush. I would not be against keeping Cam off the field until week five at Arizona, because now he's missed Denver, the Rams, Houston on the road, and you're going Arizona, Raiders, Patriots, Indy, Chargers. That's not the same as the Broncos on the road against that top 10 defense. That's what I would do. What they're probably going to do is they're probably going to play Cam right away. And what does not matter to me is who gives you the best chance to win against Denver. That does not matter to me. Because, quite frankly, I think an argument can be made Brandon Allen gives you a better chance to win against Denver than Cam does, just because you're going to be silent count, and I think that Brandon Allen understands how to manage a game better than Cam Ward at the NFL level at this point. That said, I think they're going to do what a lot of these bad teams do, and they're just going to run the quarterback out there and say, okay, you're going up against the Denver Broncos. Knock them dead, Cam! Which I think has led to a lot of regression amongst these quarterbacks and why a lot of these guys bust. 615-737-1025. More of your phones. 615-737-1025. Here on the program. So a lot of people seem to be really upset about this Brandon Allen thing. Paul wrote a whole thing about it in a story about, like, how can they have Brandon Allen as the guy behind Cam Ward? And yet, there's one name in particular I wonder if you people would be that upset with if that was the backup quarterback of the Titans. We'll do that next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106 for the game.
You mentioned the guys in your room, Cam. Brandon Allen having familiarity with the system. How much has he helped you just so far starting out, maybe with advice, a lockdown, this, that kind of thing?
Just understanding why we're calling this play, why Callahan's calling this play, even Callahan's told me why he's calling the play, whether it's to get back on track, whether it's just to me get the ball in my hands, get some yards for the receiver. But just him having familiarity with the offense, I mean, it's going to help me, especially throughout the season. And just he knows what Callie's thinking because he's played for him. So, you know, I'm excited to have him in the room with me.
There you go. That was Cam on Brandon Allen. And so a lot of people yesterday, when the Titans said, "Now we're fine at quarterback, Brandon Allen's going to be the backup," a lot of people were like, what? Paul wrote about it, saying in his article at paulkaharski.com, quote, "A good alternative to Allen may not come free, and odds are high the team will value his time in the playbook and at practice more than the level of upgrade they can get as a cut after camp. They've got to do better than Boyle as the practice squad guy, as the quarterback is one hit away from being one hit away from starting. But sure, it's Ward or bust," PK writes. And PK wrote that he couldn't believe that if Will Levis isn't going to be there, that they won't try to do better than Brandon Allen. And I cannot get out of my head how many Titan fans are underselling what Brandon Allen is. I spent all offseason telling you guys that Brandon Allen was going to be the backup quarterback. Well, but Will Levis got benched last year for Mason Rudolph. Mason Rudolph is a backup quarterback. The difference between Mason Rudolph and Brandon Allen is minuscule. And you spent all offseason telling me I was wrong, and they spent all offseason pretending there was going to be a quarterback battle between Cam Ward and Will Levis. And yesterday, Mike Borgonzi told everybody that Brandon Allen is the backup quarterback, and they don't need to add another quarterback with Will Levis out for the season. And for some reason, everybody hates it. But here's the question I want to ask you all. When it comes to backup quarterback play, and it comes to who the backup to Cam Ward is, how would you feel if it was Josh Dobbs? Remember Josh Dobbs a couple years ago when they signed him off of somebody's practice squad and he came in and started the last two games and gave you a shot to make the playoffs in that Jacksonville finale. What if Josh Dobbs was the backup quarterback or the bridge, like the mini bridge at the beginning of the year, the mini bridge quarterback to Cam Ward, and then he backs up Cam Ward the rest of the year, the way that Jacoby Brissett did last year for Drake May, and now Dobbs is the backup in New England behind Drake May? Would you guys be complaining about the backup quarterback position as much if that were the case? I'm going to guess no. If it were between Josh Dobbs and Will Levis and there was only one roster spot available, who would you rather have be the guy in the room with a young Cam Ward? My guess would be the smarter, more experienced Dobbs. Do you know what the depth chart in San Francisco was last year at quarterback? Brock Purdy 1, Brandon Allen 2, Josh Dobbs 3. Brandon Allen was ahead of Josh Dobbs on the depth chart last year. This is how it works in the NFL. Drake May, young quarterback in New England. Josh Dobbs is the backup. Bo Nix, young quarterback in Denver. Jarrett Stidham is the backup. J.J. McCarthy, young quarterback in Minnesota. Sam Howell is the backup. Caleb Williams has Case Keenum or Tyson Badgett. Brandon Allen is the guy who backed up Joe Burrow in Cincinnati and almost had to go into the Super Bowl. Remember, Burrow got hit about 35 times in that Super Bowl, and at the end of the Super Bowl, there Burrow was kind of grabbing his knee. Brandon Allen almost had to go in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl for the Cincinnati Bengals. But he's not good enough to be the backup quarterback here. He's a backup quarterback. And when it comes to a higher-priced backup quarterback, the Titans are not in the business of spending money this year. Have you guys noticed that? They spent money on one guy, Dan Moore. Outside of that, they spent very little money this year. They've got a seventh-round, second-year player in James Williams as their starting inside backer because they're not going to spend any money this year. It's all bargain basement nothing. A guy comes free and Titan fans are like, what about him? They're not going to pay. So the Titans aren't going to pay for a legitimate backup quarterback. They're paying Brandon Allen, you know, 1 point something million. Daniel Jones, if you had wanted to bring him in there, would have been $10 million. That's how much it costs. The only time that you really upgrade at the backup quarterback spot, where you go get a real backup quarterback that you can probably win some games with. Again, we'll use Daniel Jones as the example here, although Daniel Jones may end up starting in Indianapolis. But the time that you do that is when you either have a question mark as your starting quarterback, i.e. the injured Marcus Mariota, we need to go get Ryan Tannehill, or you really don't have a quarterback, and it's like, well, we just, the best we could do out there was we signed this guy. We signed Jimmy Garoppolo because we had to have somebody. I mean, look at the Giants. Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston. Why they signed? Well, we had to sign somebody. But everybody else, their backups are the same. They're all run-of-the-mill Scarbinis. That's what Brandon Allen is. If he's good enough to back up Joe Burrow, he's good enough to back up Cam Ward. I promise you there would not be as much complaining if Josh Dobbs was the backup quarterback here, and Brandon Allen, according to Kyle Shanahan, is better than Josh Dobbs. But what does Kyle Shanahan know about quarterbacks? So enough on the Brandon Allen stuff. Wes says, Jared, why do players keep coming here the offseason and then immediately say, yeah, this ain't it, I'm going to just retire? It seems like it's happening here more often than anywhere else. Am I wrong? So, again, the story yesterday was Lorenzo Carter announced that he was going to retire, or the Titans announced that Lorenzo Carter's decided to retire. See, I've thought about this because it does feel like there's been a lot of defections at the beginning of camp where, yeah, we get there and Johnny Joe's decided he's going to hang it up. I don't know if that's a Titans thing or if that's an everybody thing. You know, last year, Sadiq Charles was the starting guard for like the first 2 weeks of camp, and then he quit. That was weird. That was all screwed up. The Lorenzo Carter one, we've seen that. You know, where the general manager comes out there and says, yep, and Johnny decided he just didn't want to show up, so he's going to retire. That seems to happen more often than not. I'm thinking that's just kind of an NFL trend, where these guys that have made money, and I don't know how much money over the years Lorenzo Carter's made, but these guys who have made money, they get their 5-6 week break, and while they're on their 5 or 6 week break, they say, you know what, I don't want to do it anymore. Like, I've had enough. Like, I'm good. I've had a nice 7-year run in the NFL. I'm good. So I don't think that that's like a Titans thing as much as I think that is kind of an NFL thing. You know, a lot of these guys, I look at Trey Hendrickson. You know, he's holding out in Cincinnati. And I think that thing is a disaster that is happening with the Bengals. You know what's funny? Again, not that this is Bengal radio, but I was just kind of hearing all the talk yesterday about Trey Hendrickson. So the Bengals do not like to guarantee money after the first year of a contract. They never did it until they did it for Joe Burrow. And then they did it for Ja'Marr Chase, and they did it for T. Higgins. And now Trey Hendrickson wants 3 years of guaranteed money, and the Bengals are only willing to guarantee 1 year of the money for Hendrickson. And I just thought to myself, God, so Hendrickson wants 3 years of guaranteed money. The Bengals want 1 year of guaranteed money. If only there was a number of years in the middle where those two could come and meet. But I guess I'm not smart enough to figure that out. But like with Trey Hendrickson, his flex is, well, I've already made a bunch of money in the NFL. If you don't pay me, I'll retire. That's what Aaron Donald used to do to the Rams. And then the Rams would just give him a pay raise because they knew, like, Aaron Donald's made enough money that if Aaron Donald doesn't want to play another down, he doesn't have to because he's a gajillionaire. That is, and oftentimes these veteran players, that's kind of the leverage of, if I don't like the opportunity I'm going to get, or if I don't like, you know, the direction of the team, or if I don't feel like putting in the work or the dedication, and I've made $1 trillion, then you know what? Let's hang it up. And I don't think Lorenzo Carter's made $1 trillion, but I think Lorenzo Carter's made a decent amount of money. It was like when Andre Johnson came here and lasted like 4 games and then was like, I'm good. It's like, yeah, Andre Johnson's good because Andre Johnson's made $1 trillion and he's playing behind Tajae Sharpe. And it's like, probably should just move on with my life. Matthew from Jolton says, I would strongly consider bringing in Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz is retired. Not only is Carson Wentz retired, but Carson Wentz also is an example of a guy who's made a bunch of money and probably doesn't want to have to get up in a town that he doesn't live in at 6 a.m. every day to go in there and sit in the quarterback room and sit down and discuss, you know, oh yeah, what did you think of this throw right here? He's made enough money. You don't need to do that. That's why Tannehill's not backing up somewhere. He's made too much money. Do you realize even if you're a backup quarterback, if you're a backup Scarbini scrub on a team, do you realize the commitment that you have to make to do that? And it's one thing to say like, hey, I would make that commitment every day for $2 million. But if you've already made $130 million in your life, Do you really want to make that commitment for $2 million? Carson Wentz is retired because he's made enough money. And again, Amy's not paying for you to go get better players. Have you not figured that out? Like, that's why you have no starting corner if L'Jarius Sneed doesn't end up, because she's not paying for that. 615-737-1025. There is a story in NFL land that I got to say, I don't love. I don't think it'll be the end of the world. It certainly won't be the end of the world, but I don't love it. We'll get to it next. Stillman & Company, 1025, 106 for the game. Stillman & Company here on the program. So there is an NFL story that has come out that I'll tell you, I'm not surprised by it because there have been a lot of rumors about this. But I think this is bad for football fans. So ESPN and the NFL are closing in. This is Andrew Marchand in The Athletic on a deal that would basically see ESPN buy the NFL network. According to sources briefed on negotiations, ESPN and the NFL are inside the 5-yard line on another groundbreaking deal for ESPN to acquire NFL Media, the arm of the league that focuses on content and runs the NFL network. So basically, this would be a multi-billion dollar deal, and it would give ESPN ownership of NFL Network, NFL Red Zone, and the other NFL Plus and the other things that the NFL operates. The league tried for years to sell off the NFL Network and the Red Zone and all of that, and they've had some success, but according to Andrew Marchand, in a media ecosystem that is more scattered, it may finally be ready to let someone else manage them for a pretty penny, of course. The exact amount of money or equity that Disney and ESPN would pay is not yet known, but it will be enormous. And it will take 9 months, give or take, for ESPN to officially acquire the NFL Network. Let me just say this. I think that's bad for sports fans. I think it's bad. And I'll tell you why. I don't think it's the end of the world. Again, ESPN already has games. CBS has games. Fox has games. NBC has games. Netflix has games. Prime has games. You know, they all got the games. And that's what we really care about, are the games. But I've always liked the NFL Network as an alternative to ESPN. You know, in our studio, there are two televisions. There's a giant television on the wall, and then there's like a kind of a smaller TV in the corner. And I'll never forget that when we got the bigger TV, Floyd demanded that the big TV have NFL Network on at all times. And so one TV would be on ESPN, and one TV would be on NFL Network. And it's not to say that NFL Network will go away. If ESPN buys it, it'll probably be the same NFL Network for the most part. But what they'll probably do is they'll probably cut down on a lot of the NFL Network programming, and a lot of NFL Network programming will probably just be more ESPN programming. Well, if I want more Dan Orlovsky and more Mina Kimes and more Pat McAfee, I'll just watch ESPN. I like the alternative that the NFL Network offers. I like the fact that during the draft, you know, if Mel Kiper Jr. won't shut up about Shedeur Sanders, I can change the channel and put on NFL Network and watch what they're saying. And I got to believe that if that ends up being the case where they buy, then it's just all going to be the same draft coverage all the time. I like more voices. I like more opinions. I like more content. So if I don't want to watch that crappy show on ESPN, or I don't want to watch something on NFL Network, then I can watch the other one. You know, like, there's a lot of guys on ESPN I don't like. I don't want to watch Marcus Spears ramble on about something he knows nothing about, because if it's not the Cowboys, he doesn't know anything about it. So I'll go watch NFL Network. And I don't want to watch Ian Rappaport give himself the... Well, I better be careful here. I don't want to watch Ian Rappaport, so I'll turn off NFL Network. And instead, what I think you're going to get is I think you're going to get less original content, and ESPN is going to spend a gazillion dollars, and so they're going to cut their own costs to do this, and then they're going to turn around and they're going to cut NFL Network costs. And it's not like the NFL needs the money. The NFL's not hurting. So I saw this, and I'm like, I think this is bad business, at least bad for sports fans. I get why ESPN would do it. I get why the NFL would do it. The NFL doesn't want to pay for it anymore. It's expensive to operate a cable channel, especially when cable TV is decreasing in homes. Secondly, it's a lot of money to pay all those people. It's a lot of money to run a studio, a network out of LA. It's a lot of money. And I get why ESPN would do it, because if ESPN does it, then they are tied to the NFL no matter what. And ESPN, they're going to try to launch their direct-to-consumer package. And if you're going to do it, you need NFL and NFL programming. And that's what they're going to get. Now, the Red Zone channel, I have the Red Zone channel. I also have Sunday Ticket. I don't watch a ton of Red Zone channel, to be honest with you, because I usually watch the Titans. And then I'll kind of flip between the three or four late games in the late afternoon windows, even though I guess I could watch Red Zone channel. I don't watch a lot of Red Zone channel. A lot of you watch Red Zone. I do worry about ESPN taking over the Red Zone channel. If ESPN's smart and they take over the Red Zone channel, they'll make it easily distributable and they'll keep Scott Hansen doing the Red Zone. But I do not like the idea of ESPN buying the NFL Network, but it looks like it's going to happen. The other thing is apparently Rich Eisen is taking his radio show to ESPN Radio, and that's going to be their flagship programming. Let me say this. Rich Eisen has had a radio show for 10 years. I don't know one person who listens to it on a daily basis, who sits there and is like, oh, hold on, the Rich Eisen show's on. Click. And yet ESPN's acting like this is some sort of big deal. Give me a break. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Chad Brinker and Mike Borgonzi had a choice to make yesterday, and they made it. I do not disagree with that choice, but there may be ramifications. We'll get to that coming up next. Stillman & Company, 1025, 106.3 The Game.